Good evening, everyone. Thank you for coming. Welcome to History of the Talmud, number 10. Let me give just a little bit of background to where we're up to, because this is really, I think, the third shiur in a series about Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel was, in many ways, the great reformer of the Jewish people. That's because he established a path and a method for the Jewish people to live in a society and a world that did not have a Beis HaMikdash. Because of that, he also was forced to make some highly controversial decisions, and he also had to make some very heavy decisions about the Jewish people. And his major interlocutor and critic was Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Yoshua, we remember, even though he may not have been the most notable amongst Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's disciples, nevertheless, he was one of Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai's closest disciples. And it seems on a number of occasions he finds himself on the opposite end of an argument with Rabban Gamliel. Let's just go over the three cases where they argue. Number one is in terms of the issue of the calendar. It seems that Rabban Gamliel takes a number of leniencies with the calendar that Rabbi Yoshua is unhappy with, to the point where Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua disagree as to the date of Yom Kippur. In order to enforce his law, Rabban Gamliel, what does he do? He forces Rabbi Yoshua to come before him with his staff and hat in order to prove that he is in fact not celebrating Yom Kippur on that day. They have a similar type of argument regarding Bechor, whether we differentiate between a chaver and an am haaretz, between a knowledgeable person and an unknowledgeable person in terms of Bechor. Rabbi Yoshua was of the opinion that we do differentiate. Rabban Gamliel was of the opinion that we don't differentiate. And because of that, because Rabbi Yoshua publicly disagreed with Rabban Gamliel, Rabban Gamliel again punished him by forcing him to stand while Rabban Gamliel gave the shir until people intervened. The third time was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. Rabbi Yoshua was asked whether Ma'ariv was a requirement or it was optional. And Rabbi Yoshua took the opinion that it was optional. And Rabban Gamliel was of the opinion that Ma'ariv was a chova, was a requirement. And this argument, again, led to Rabbi Yoshua being publicly embarrassed. And this was, again, the people in the Beit Midrash at the time had enough of it already. They did not want to hear this type of argument, and they form a coup that deposes Rabban Gamliel as the Nasi, and then they go about choosing who will replace him. They decide you can't use Rabbi Yoshua, because Rabbi Yoshua is Baal Debava, as they say. It's his interlocutor, it's his arguer, it would look bad. They can't use Rabbi Akiva, who was the rising star of the Beit Midrash, for fear that since Rabbi Akiva was descendant from Gerim, from converts, that Rabban Gamliel would be able to use his substantial lineage, having descended from Hillel and ultimately from David HaMelech, to curse or to undermine Rabbi Akiva's leadership. And so the lot fell upon the very, very young, but nonetheless also rising star, of Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, who we know from our Haggadahs was but 17 years old on the day that he took over. And when he was, even though he debated whether or not he should take it, nevertheless, Nevertheless, he finally takes it, and Rabbi Gamliel is deposed. It turned out that the day Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah came into the Beit Midrash, or became the leader of the Beit Midrash, was an extraordinarily productive day, which is why you'll find in many places in the Mishnah and Talmud with the statement of Bo Bayom, on that day, meaning that very day. And one of the major reasons that it was such a productive day is, again, you have a certain comfort level that if you argue with the Nasi, he's not going to, you know, burn you or destroy you. And two is, Rabbi Gamliel would only allow into the Beit Midrash those people who were Tocho Kivaro, who they were internally and externally consistent, which kind of excludes a lot of people. You know, all those hypocrites out there could not participate in the Beis Medrash discussion. But also, meaning, depending on where you draw the line, you end up, at, you know, nobody's perfect, and you end up excluding a lot of people from the Beis Medrash. On that day, they added, I forget the number of benches to the Beis Medrash, but it was an extraordinarily productive day, to the point where the Gemara says they finished a whole Meseches on that day, and they produced a number of conclusions on Halachos on that day because of it. In the end, Rabbi Gamliel realizes that he made a mistake. He goes to apologize to Rabbi Yoshua. There is a very, very interesting moment where he realizes how poor Rabbi Yoshua really is, and that really bothers him, and Rabbi Yoshua is upset that Rabbi Gamliel doesn't understand what the rest of the people are going through. And in the end of the day, Rabbi Gamliel asks him for the sake of his father, Rabbi Shimon, to please forgive him, and Rabbi Yoshua accedes and agrees. And here is where the Yerushalmi and the Bavli diverge. The Babylonian Talmud takes the position or records the fact that the deal that was made was that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would serve for 1 week every month as the leader, and Rabbi Gamliel would serve for 3 weeks. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would not be reduced from a position of leadership. The Yerushalmi has then basically a separation of powers that's going on, which I think, considering what went on and the worry that Rabbi Gamliel was becoming dictatorial, I think it's maybe the more logical conclusion, that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would take up the day-to-day operations of the Beit Midrash, and Rabbi Gamliel would remain the overall leader of the Jewish people, the Nasi and the Av Beis Din. And they were co-heads, with Rabbi Gamliel being slightly higher. That's the position that's taken by the Yerushalmi. The question, though, is why were Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua arguing so much? So you could say, oh, Rabbi Gamliel ruled with an iron hand and never allowed anyone to disagree with him. Well, this isn't true, because we see other situations where Rabban Gamliel, well, people very comfortably disagree with Rabban Gamliel. And so why all of a sudden here? So just to give you one example, so it's the second to last page before you, right before we get to Rabban Gamliel's change, is the Gemara in Bava Kamma, Daf Ayin Dalet Amud Bet. And the Gemara says, Ma'aseh b'Rabban Gamliel, so case of Rabban Gamliel, Shesima es ein tevi avdo, that he blinded his slave Tevi's eye. So he and Tevi were very close. We find out from a number of Gemaras. Tevi is a decent guy in all senses, and Rabbi Gamliel is very, very enamored by his slave, and so he was very happy because now he had an excuse to set Tevi free. You know, it's unfortunate that Tevi's eye got blinded, but you know, the Torah says that that an eved goes out b'shein v'ayin, and if you knock out a tooth or you knock out an eye. So hayasameach simcha gadola, he was very, very happy about this. Mitzao l'Rabbi Yoshua, so he finds his friend and his frenemy, Rabbi Yoshua, and Amar lo, he says, did you hear? Tevi was set free. Amar lo lama. So Rabbi Yeshua says, why? Amar lo shesimeti azeino. He says, I by accident blinded him in one eye. Amar lo. So Rabbi Yeshua says to him, you would think Rabbi Yeshua, he's going to show a little bit of deference to the Nasi. What does he say? Ein bedvarecha klum. He says basically, you don't know what you're talking about. Shekvar ein lo edim. He has no witnesses, so nothing can happen. So we see here that a number of things. Number one is Rabbi Yeshua doesn't seem to have any issue arguing for Rabbi Gamliel, and Rabbi Gamliel, according to the Gemara, does not respond. The Gemara goes on with the discussion of whether, you know, you need to bring witnesses or not, and, you know, they accept or not accept Rabbi Yeshua's opinion. And that's the way the Gemara goes, and there's never any indication that Rabbi Gamliel is somehow upset by the fact that Rabbi Yeshua argues with him. The nature of the system is one that you would expect there to be argumentation. So what is it about these three events that kind of irked Rabbi Gamliel so, and what really changed in the time afterwards? So now I'm going to give you the interpretation of Rav Reuven Margoliot. Rav Reuven Margoliot, for those of you who don't know who he was, is somewhere around the time of the founding of the State of Israel. He was the librarian at the University of Tel Aviv. He was also perhaps one of the most encyclopedic minds that the Jewish people have ever known. And he wrote this tiny, thin little book that you could write basically a book on each footnote, called Yesod HaMishnah V'Arichata. That's what it's called. The Basis of the Mishnah and How It Was Edited. And basically, he does a lot of what I'm doing, and I would be lying if I told you it wasn't one of my main sources that I use in terms of finding materials. But one of the things he does is he tries to reconstruct the path to the editing and publication of the Mishnah based only on Talmudic and Midrashic sources. Okay? That's what he does. And successfully so, especially when you know everything. I don't know if it's easy to do things like that, but it certainly makes it easier than if you don't know everything. Okay? So he has a theory. His theory is that Rabbi Gamliel's, that the issue here, more than anything, is Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. And the authority and the continuing tension between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel. What does that mean? So he noticed a couple of things, Rav Margoliot. One of them is that at some point in his career, Rabban Gamliel was paskening like Beit Shammai. We'll start with a Gemara, very kind of innocuous Gemara in Brachos, Daf Mem Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara in Brachos says as follows. Okay, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Heviu lefanav shemen vehadas. If someone is brought before him oil and myrtle branches, so which blessing do you make first? Here it's talking about the blessings that you would make on the smell. One you would say a specific. Back in the days when people used to make brachas on smells, for whatever reasons we don't do it so much anymore. So there are different brachos, just like we have on, you know, liquids versus solids and things that grow from the ground versus. So there are different brachos. We'll say just a borei minei besamim, but there's borei isbei besamim, you know, grasses and bushes. There's borei shmanei besamim. So which one do you bless on first? So Beit Shammai omrim mivareich al hashemen, v'achar kach mivareich al hahadas. So Shammai says what? First oil, then myrtle. Beit Hillel, always got to be different. Amevarech al hadas, they make the blessing on the myrtle, and then mevarech al hashemen. Okay, Amar Rabban Gamliel says Rabban Gamliel, ani achria shemen. What does Rabban Gamliel says? I'm going to decide. Who does he decide by? He says oil takes precedence, like Beis Shammai, not like Beis Hillel, right? Zachinu l'sichaso hadas, the reach zachinu l'sichaso lo zachinu. He says, and what's his reasoning? He says, I'm going to defend Beit Shammai's opinion. Since oil gives us two things, because you can use it not only for its wonderful smell, but also for anointing, right? So it has two, whereas a myrtle branch, all you can get is the smell out of it. You're not going to eat it. You're not going to anoint yourself for it. You're not going to mop the floor with it. It only has one use. So the two use takes precedence over the one with only one use. Okay? So here we see, what does Rambam Gamliel do? He's holding like Beis Shammai. Again, Gemara in Beitza, Dach Chaf Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara says, Shlosha Devarim Rambam Gamliel Machmir Kedivrei Beis Shammai. On three things, Rambam Gamliel was stringent like Beit Shammai. Ein tomnin es achamin lechatchila biyom tov. Pack in hot food on Yom Tov. Ein etzokvin es haminora b'Yom Tov. You can't cover up an oil lamp that's going to go out eventually on Yom Tov. And ein open patin gritzin el rikikin. There's only a certain type of bread. You can only bake a bread in a certain way on Yom Tov. Amar Rabbi Gamliel, so says Rabbi Gamliel, Miyemehen shel beis Abba, loya you open patin gritin el rikitin. So when he says, what? There's a tradition in my family that we take this more stringent opinion of Beis Shammai when it comes to Yom Tov. So we see here that there may, even though Rambam Gamliel is a descendant of Hillel, of all people, nevertheless, there was a tradition in his family to hold the more stringent opinion of Beis Shammai. Now let's look back at some of the stories. So what was Rambam Gamliel's big rule in the Beis Medrash? Rambam Gamliel's big rule in the Beis Medrash was that you only allow in students who were tocho kavara, right? Who were the inside like their outside, right? Who were internally and externally consistent. Where does he get that idea that you only teach certain types of students? It was Beis Shammai who was of the opinion that what? That there was, right? We learned the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that Beis Shammai says you only teach a student who is ra'oi, who is wealthy, who is smart, who is perfect in every way. This was Beis Shammai. Beis Shammai had this elitist perspective. Why was that? Because Beis Shammai was, again, he was the elitist, he was the stringent, and Rambam Gamliel was holding like Beis Shammai for everything. So because of that, he locked the door. Okay? What else did Shammai say? So here, this is a Mishnah in the first parak of Pirkei Avos. Shammai Omer, so says Shammai, Asei Toratcha Keva. What does he say? Make your Torah consistent. Now let's look back at every one of the arguments between Rabbi Yoshua and Rabban Gamliel. Okay, number one, the easiest one is to say is, what does Rabbi Yoshua say? We differentiate between a chaver, between an educated person and an uneducated person in terms of bechora. What is Rabbi Gamliel's opinion? No differentiation. What is it again? Ase Torat Chakeva. And here's where Rav Margoliot makes the next leap. He says, if we start allowing Rabbi Yoshua to be machmir, to take upon himself a stringency, and fast on an extra day, lest it perhaps be Yom Kippur, what are we doing? We're creating inconsistency. Rabbi Yoshua is going to be doing one thing, and everyone else is going to be doing something else. So we can't have that. So what does he do? Rabbi Yoshua, you got to come and you got to hold like everybody else. And the final thing, what were they arguing about Myriv? If we declare before the entire world that Myriv is optional, so what's going to happen? Everyone inside the Beis Medrash, what are they going to do? They're all going to daven Myriv all the time, because why would I miss out on an opportunity to talk to God? What's everyone outside the Beis Medrash going to do? The same thing we do whenever anything else is optional. Oh, it's optional? All right, so I'm going to opt out of this one. So what was Rabbi Gamliel searching for? He was searching for consistency. Right, that consistency, and he may have felt. I don't want to say for sure, but he may have felt that, you know, Beis Shammai was the necessary position to be taken in order to bring the people along beyond that. What seems to be happening is Rabbi Yeshua was unhappy with it. Was Rabbi Yeshua unhappy? And here's where it's going to be a little bit difficult to decide. Was Rabbi Yeshua unhappy because he was holding like Beis Shammai? Or was he unhappy because he was insisting that everybody hold like Beis Shammai? That's where things are unclear. Okay, was Rabbi Yeshua defending the right of argumentation? Or was he defending the rights of Beis Hillel? I think he is defending the rights of Beis Hillel. And where he differs with Rabbi Gamliel is that the more stringent opinions of Beis Shammai are not necessarily going to be the best situation for the people. And what's going on there may be that this tension that's going on, Rabbi Gamliel trying to impose the Beis Shammai perspective, and Rabbi Yeshua rejecting it out of hand. And that was the difference between them. And the coup that ultimately occurs is that they say we cannot have the Shammaian perspective ultimately leading us in a diaspora existence. We're going to need the Hillelian perspective to overtake us. And that's dafka what happens during the time of Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua. During their time, the decision is made, and apparently it's going to be a rough decision because we're going to see some of the reverberations that go along with it. The rough decision that is going to be made is that we are going to hold like Hillel for time immemorial. Why? Because it's going to give us greater flexibility in terms of deciding the halakha. It's going to be less heavy upon the people. It's going to give more room for halachic interpretation and creativity and application. There were all numerous reasons why they believed that they were ultimately better off holding like Beis Hillel, and this is when it happens. Okay? And the story goes as follows. So the Gemara in Ervin, Daf Vav Amud Bet, says as follows. V'hatanya, we learned in a Brisa, La'olam halacha kebeis Hillel. The halacha is like Beis Hillel. The arotze lasos kedivrei Beis Shammai kedivrei Beis Hillel oseh. So the brisa starts off as follows, right? The halacha was, this seems what originally happened. The halacha was originally cited to be like Beis Hillel, and then we're going to give people the flexibility. You want to hold like Beis Hillel, hold like Beis Hillel. You want to hold like Beis Shammai, but just so you know what our position is, right? Mikule Beis Shammai Mikule Beis Hillel, Russia. So anyone who chooses cafeteria style Judaism, what does he do? I'm going to only take the lenient opinions of Beis Hillel, and I'm only going to take the lenient opinions of Beis Shammai. So says the Gemara, Russia. That's an evil person. Right, mechumrei Beis Shammai umechumrei Beis Hillel. If you take both the stringencies of Beis Hillel and the stringency of Beis Shammai, so alav hakasuv omer. So about him, the pasuk says that's not good either. Beis Shammai if you take the stringencies of Beis Hillel and the stringency of Beis Shammai, it's a repetition in the sheet for some reason. So about him, the pasuk says, "Haksil b'choshech cholech," the fool walks in darkness. Right? So if you take only the leniencies, all leniencies across the board, whoever has the most lenient opinion, so you're evil. If you take only the stringencies, you're a fool. Okay. Ela ike Beis Shammai kekulon ukechomron, ike Beis Hillel kekulon ukechomron. So what's the rule? Either you hold with the stringencies, or with Beis Shammai across the board for good and for bad, or you hold like Beis Hillel across the board for good and for bad, right? Right. Obviously at the time, what did Rabbi Gamliel decide? We're all holding like Beis Shammai for good and for bad, and he was going to be enforce it to the nth degree. So then the Gemara says, "V'hada amarta harotze lasot Beis Shammai oseh." So he says, "Wait a minute. What's the point of saying halacha kabeis? You said halacha kabeis hillel. The halacha is like Beis Hillel, but if you want, you could do like however you want. What is that supposed to mean? If the halacha is like him, then you can't do like anyone you are. You should have to hold like Beis Hillel." So the Gemara says, "Lo kasha, kan kodem baskol, kan la'achar baskol. One is before the baskol, the voice from the heaven. The other one is talking about after the voice from the heavens. And here's where it is. Or, so before the voice from the heavens, you get to choose. After the voice from the heavens, then what? You got to hold like Beis Hillel. Okay, that's opinion number one. The Ibayis Ema, if you want, you can say a different opinion. Havahala Achar Paskol, both of them are talking about after the voice from the heavens came. Rabbi Yoshua he de lo mishkach bevaskol, but it was Rabbi Yoshua who says what? You can't hold like voices from the heaven. Rabbi Yoshua was very consistent in his opinion. What was Rabbi Yoshua's opinion? Why am I holding like Beis Hillel? Why am I holding like Beis Hillel? I'm holding like Beis Hillel. Remember, we left that question up in the air. Why? What was Rabbi Yoshua? What was Rabbi Yoshua defending? Why am I holding like Beis Hillel? I'm holding like Beis Hillel. Why? Because he gives greater room for creativity, which is why I'm not going to have any heavens impose the halacha upon me. And we'll learn more about this as we learn the conscientious objectors. But Rabbi Yoshua's decision was he says, no, I want there to be the posek to have halachic freedom to act as he sees fit in every generation. Sometimes like Beis Shammai, sometimes like Beis Hillel. In the end, Rabbi Yoshua loses on that one. He gets the halacha like Beis Hillel, but when we say the halacha is like Beis Hillel, we really mean the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And just to give you some of the indication of what was going on here, just the Gemara later on in Erevin does finally describe what the exact baskol was, what this voice from the heaven was. So Amar Rabbi Abba Amar Shmuel, Shalosh Shanim Nechleku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel. So 3 years Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued. My sense is, what was this 3 years of arguing? This wasn't Hillel and Shammai of the pre-destruction, but it is the houses of Hillel and the houses of Shammai of post-destruction, when, during the time of Rabban Gamliel, halalu omrim halacha kemosenu, v'halalu omrim halacha kemosenu. Both of them saying, the halacha is like us. Yatza, basko, v'amra, out came a voice from the heaven and said, elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim. Both of them are the words of the living God. V'halacha kebeis Hillel. And the halacha is like Beis Hillel. And again, this is trying to find the elegant path between paskening halacha and the consistency. Remember, because only Beis Shammai is going to insist upon total and complete consistency to whatever has been traditionally thought. So it says the Gemara, so if both of them are the words of the living God, so why, by what merit did Beis Hillel get the halacha if both of them are right? So it says the Gemara, because they were pleasant and easygoing. Vishonin divrehen vidivrei Beis Shammai, and they would always learn both their opinion and the opinion of Beis Shammai. Lo od, not only that, ela shemakdimin divrei Beis Shammai lidivrehen. They would even explain before they would give their own opinions. They would first explain the opinions of Beis Shammai. What is it that made Beis Hillel the path that we ultimately follow? It was the pluralistic bent of Beis Hillel. It doesn't mean, you know, Isha Yashar Beinav Yaseh. It doesn't mean everyone gets to do their own thing, but there was a pluralistic bent. And again, if you get back to the argument between Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua, you see that that was the argument that was going on there. Rabban Gamliel was of the opinion, there is my opinion, and everyone else needs to go jump in a lake. Rabbi Yoshua was in favor not only of paskening like Beis Hillel, he was in favor of the freedom and the open discussion that Beis Hillel advocated, that Beis Hillel's opinions advocated. That being said, we don't hold of Rabbi Yoshua's total freedom. You know, Rabbi Yoshua is really the whole other side of the coin. We didn't choose Rabbi Yoshua to be the leader of the Beit Midrash. Who did we choose? Rav Elazar ben Azariah. Right? Because Rav Elazar ben Azariah is the middle ground, it seems, between the two opinions. It's encouraging of the plethora of understanding, the open-minded discussion of it, the opportunity for halachic creativity, yet at the same time the realization that in terms of practical halacha, we have to seek out some sort of position or some sort of conclusion. Just an interesting addendum to the Gemara. The Gemara says, "Tanu Rabbanim Shtei Shanim Umechza Nechleku Beis Shammai Beis Hillel." Right, for 2.5 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel argued about another issue. Halalu Omrim Noach Lo LaAdam Shelo Nivra Yoter MiShenivra. One says better that a person should never have been born than he should have been born. V'Halalu Omrim Noach Lo LaAdam SheNivra Yoter SheLo Nivra. And the other one says, better a person that they have been born than for them not to have been born. Nimnu v'gamru, they counted up and they concluded, Noach lo la'adam shelo nivra, yoser mishenivra. Okay? Better a person to be born rather than not born. But now, once you're born, yifashvesh b'ma'asav, you should look into your actions, yimashvesh b'ma'asav, or you should take stock of your actions, whatever it is. Interestingly enough, we don't know who says what. Is it Beis Shammai or Beis Hillel that they were arguing about it? And that's kind of proof, to a certain extent, that Beis Hillel won, which is that all of a sudden the two opinions were kind of debated on equal footing in those terms. So just one of the things, what seems to be, at least according to Rav Ruvein Margoliot, what seems to be behind the entire discussion between Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yeshua and the arguments between them is the question of, are we going to be guided by the perspectives of Beis Shammai, or are we going to be guided by the perspectives of Beis Hillel? It seems that the insurgency of the Beis Medrash was an insurgency in favor of Beis Hillel. Okay, that being said, notice it wasn't until the third time that the people decided it was enough, is enough with Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. It wasn't a total coup in that sense. And what do? They bring Rabbi Gamliel's back. They want Rabbi Gamliel's perspective in some ways, and they don't want it in other ways. And one of the things we're going to get into now, and I think it's something we need to really contemplate, is you'd be hard-pressed to find a moment in history where the revolutionaries were as aware of the fact that they were being revolutionary at the time that they were doing it. I mean, I guess you could say with the founding fathers of the United States of America, you know, they knew they were creating something that had never been created before here in the United States of America, and they knew that they had their opportunity to do so. One of the things we're going to see as the ideological wars within the Beit Midrash continue, one of the things we're going to see is that they are quite aware of how creative they're being. And they are wary of it, but at the same time excited by the opportunities that it offers. So they said, we rejected a certain perspective. We rejected a perspective that says we can only do things based on the way things have always been done, and we can only decide halacha based on traditionalist, what did they do? They decided that they wanted that opportunity for creativity that Beis Hillel promoted. At the same time, they also wanted a psak. They also wanted to be able to come to conclusions. They wanted to be able to be nimnu v'gamru. They wanted to be able to count up and make decisions on various things. So they realize that they are being both revolutionary and trying to forge a traditional path as well. Not the ultra-traditional path, blazed by Beis Shammai, and not the ultra-creative path offered by Rabbi Yeshua, but perhaps something very much in the middle. And it's interesting, just in terms of, if you want to get to how they made the decisions, they didn't choose Rabbi Yeshua because Rabbi Yeshua was everything Rabbi Gamliel wasn't, and they didn't want that. They didn't choose Rabbi Akiva. Why? Because Rabbi Akiva was the newly lit flame. What was Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva was the master of creativity, the ultimate creative force in the Beis Medrash. He was the one who, Oker Harim, he could uproot mountains. There wasn't a crown on a letter that he couldn't interpret. He was the master of creativity. Who did they choose instead? They choose Rav Elazar ben Azariah, who seems to share that youthful creativity represented by Rabbi Akiva. But at the same time, what is it that attracts them to Rav Elazar ben Azariah? The fact that he's descendant of Ezra HaSofer, of the great traditionalist Ezra, that he's descendant from Kohanim. They wanted to straddle that line. Not again. You have the, and that's why they even kept Rabbi Gamliel in the fold. They're not going to kick him out of the Beis Medrash because they feel that what he's adding is definitely worth its influence within the Beis Medrash of having that sense of consistency. So what you have here is kind of a watershed moment. It's the moment that they decide Beis Shammai is no longer the accepted halacha. But in deciding Beis Shammai and is not the accepted halacha, they open the door to a new sense of creativity. And that new sense of creativity creates opportunity, but it's an opportunity that they want to, you know, put guidelines on. You know, not give total freedom, but enough freedom for something really, really special to happen. And this is really laying the groundwork for what's ultimately going to be the Mishnah, also potentially laying the groundwork for, meaning this sense of creativity and opportunity, etc., may also be laying the groundwork for the Bar Kokhba rebellion, but you'll have to stay tuned to future Shiurim to find out all about that. But all right, stop here.